From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, in for Terry Gross.
Cut to everyone on campus getting as drunk as they want montage.
Today, Joel McHale, who stars in the comedy series Community. Last year, NBC canceled the series after 5 seasons, but now Community is back, streaming new episodes on Yahoo. McHale also hosts The Soup on E!, satirizing reality TV. Last May, he was the featured comic at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, with President Obama as his opening act. The targets of his jokes, the president, politicians, journalists, were in the audience. Knowing his material might offend them, he prepared by having one of his writers heckle him while he rehearsed.
I'd be like, Hillary Clinton's daughter is going to have a baby, and he's like, don't you even dare go there. How dare you?
That's coming up on today's Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm David Biancooley, sitting in for Terry Gross.
Objection! I teach law at Greendale, so believe me, I don't know much about law. But I do know a contract violation when I see one.
That's today's guest, Joel McHale, star of the comedy series Community, from what turned out to be the show's final episode on NBC. At the time Terry spoke with Joel McHale in 2014, the fate of his series was in limbo. NBC hadn't renewed it, but there was talk that the series, after 5 seasons on NBC, might be picked up by someone else. That someone else turned out to be Yahoo TV, which now streams new episodes weekly on Yahoo's screen. Community is famous for constantly parodying and alluding to movies and TV shows. Since 2004, McHale also has hosted the E! Network's The Soup, on which he satirizes reality TV and celebrity news. When he was the featured comic last May at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the subject of his satire was politics and the news media, and the comic who opened for him was President Obama. Joel McHale was on Fresh Air when the thriller Deliver Us from Evil was in theaters. In it, he and Eric Bana played New York City cops on the trail of a killer. In this scene, Bana is chasing down a seemingly routine domestic call. Bana's partner, played by McHale, is surprised by his interest. Eric Bana speaks first.
6-pack op sergeant to Central K.
Go, sergeant.
Run a name check on a 1052.
10-4, just a second.
What, you want a domestic call? Radar? You know when your radar goes off, you usually wind up with stitches?
You're an adrenaline junkie, and without my radar, you don't get your fix, okay?
You're right, and for that, I am grateful.
Joel McHale, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for having me, Terry. This is a dream come true. I'm not kidding.
Thank you for saying that.
You have no idea the street cred that this is buying me right now in my hometown of Seattle and in Los Angeles. There are a lot of pasty white people that I know that are going to love this.
That this makes me great. Feel so good.
I'm pasty myself. So.
Me too.
They're my people.
Yes. So, there's a pretty famous paintball episode of Community,
yeah,
in which you're all, it's a kind of parody of action films, and you're all running around with paintball guns. And in Deliver Us from Evil, there's like more than one scene where you're running up and down stairs with your gun pulled, or, you know, entering,
yeah,
into the door with your gun pulled. So is there like actor training school for running around with guns when you're not used,
yes,
to it?
There's a school outside of Portland, Oregon called How to Run on Camera and Not Look Like an Idiot. The only way to do it, from what I've seen, is to do it is you must be as committed as if you were in those things, even though you're doing a comedy. And a lot of the things you saw me running down were padded. So it's very odd to run down padded stairs, even though it's there for your safety. It's like running while you're drunk. And you just have to be careful because you're carrying shotguns and you're covered in gear. Believe me, these are all good problems to have. But I felt like a 12-year-old getting to be in an action film.
So they're padded in case you fall?
Yeah, and then I actually do tumble down the stairs in this huge knife fight scene, and I thought I was being really professional and would not needing a stuntman, and I tumbled down and bashed my arm open and ripped all the skin off, and then they said, good job, Joel, that was really necessary, and now you have to do it 5 more times. And then my stunt double, he was very good to the point where I get thrown into a wall, and I did it myself once, and everyone kind of gave a clap and said, "That looked great, Mr. Actor Guy." And then the stunt double did it, and it looked amazing. And then everyone clapped, and I said, "How did you do that?" And he said, "Oh, I got knocked out." He actually knocked himself unconscious, not on purpose, but he fell backwards and then came to about 5 seconds later. So he really sacrificed himself. On top of that, he's a Princeton grad. So I just want to say thank you, Princeton, for making such a great stunt double who will knock himself out for a movie.
One of the things you had to do in the movie was be in, you know, like fake rainstorm. I assume they were fake rainstorms, unless you waited until it was raining all the time. There's a lot of rain in this movie, and I'm always the one in the audience thinking, "Guys, get umbrellas." But you know, like you're these like hard-boiled cops, so you're out there in the pouring rain, getting totally drenched.
Right.
And then I'm thinking, like, okay, if they need another take, then you put on dry clothes and go through the whole thing again and get totally drenched, and then get another outfit that's exactly the same for continuity purposes, but it's dry, and you keep doing that over and over again.
The poor people in the costumes department, they have 9 hair dryers out, and they have about 3 changes of your costume and it takes a whole thing to do it. And last summer here in New York, it was one of the wettest summers apparently in history. And on top of that, it was 100 degrees at night. It would only drop down to 90, or so. It was like we were in, I don't know, the Amazon or something. It was so warm. And so the rain machine is a huge truck, and it's full of cold water. So at first, it's very welcomed, and then it becomes bone-chillingly cold to the point where Eric Bana and I couldn't form words. You have to, you had to go warm up because your lips would start getting so cold. So it was a very bizarre, I mean, believe me, I love it. I love being in the movies. I love being on TV. So, you know, it's all happy problems, but it's a bizarre problem.
So let's talk about Community. You play Jeff Winger, a lawyer who isn't allowed to practice at his law firm because they found out that he faked his college degree. He didn't really go to Columbia University. He went to college in Columbia, South America. So he's back in Community College and kind of meets up with all these other misfits of different ages who are there for various reasons. So let's play a clip from the pilot. And this is a scene. You have a crush on one of the students. So you tell her that you're holding a Spanish study group and she should come. There really is no study group. You really don't know Spanish.
Right.
And you just want to be with her. But she tells others and they, you know, other people show up. And first you try to get them fighting so you'll have an excuse to leave with the girl you have a crush on. And then you figure out that's not working, so you'd better get them back to being friends and there being peace. So here's how you get peace to break out in this pilot episode of Community.
You know what makes humans different from other animals?
Feet.
No. Come on, bears have feet.
We're the only species on Earth that observes Shark Week. Sharks don't even observe Shark Week, but we do. For the same reason, I can pick up this pencil, tell you its name is Steve, and go like this.
Oh.
And part of you dies just a little bit on the inside, because people can connect with anything. We can sympathize with a pencil, we can forgive a shark, and we can give Ben Affleck an Academy Award for screenwriting.
Big mistake.
People can find the good in just about anything but themselves. Look at me. It's clear to all of you that I am awesome. But I can never admit that because that would make me an ass. But what I can do is see what makes Annie awesome. She's driven. We need driven people, or the lights go out and the ice cream melts. And Pierce. We need guys like Pierce. This guy has wisdom to offer.
The Dalai Lama and I.
We should listen to him sometime. We wouldn't regret it. And Shirley. Shirley has earned our respect, not as a wife, not as a mother, but as a woman. And don't test her on that, because that thing about the jukebox was way too specific to be improvised. Yeah. And Troy. Who cares if Troy thinks he's all that? Maybe he is. Do you think astronauts go to the moon because they hate oxygen? No, they're trying to impress their high school's prom king. And Abed. Abed's a shaman. You ask him to pass the salt, he gives you a bowl of soup. Because you know what? Soup is better. Abed is better. You are all better than you think you are. You are just designed not to believe it when you hear it from yourself.
Soup?
I want you to look to the person to your left. Sorry, look at the person sitting next to you.
Look at her, okay.
Yeah. I want you to extend to that person the same compassion that you extend to Sharks, Pencils, and Ben Affleck. I want you to say to that person, I forgive you.
I forgive you.
I forgive you.
Little twerp.
Pierce, I'd like you to say I forgive you.
You didn't say it?
I forgive you.
You've just stopped being a study group. You have become something unstoppable. I hereby pronounce you a community.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, well, I hope Ben Affleck's listening, because I'm sure he's not. It's ironic because that came out 5 years ago before he won Best Picture, and now he's Batman. So I guess that's a bit dated now. Ben, I didn't write that, so I can't be responsible for the things that come out of my mouth.
There are so many pop culture references to TV shows and movies in Community. Did you always get the references, or did you need some of them explained to you?
Oh, that happened every time we would read through the scripts. We would have to look stuff up. I mean, in this last season, we made a reference to a very little-known Sean Connery movie called Zardoz, which came out.
Oh, he's running around almost like in a diaper.
Yeah, we referenced that. Uh-huh. There's things that get said that I went, I have no idea what that was, and I'm just going to trust. And Dan would always pack these, like they ended up being 35-page scripts into 21 minutes. And Abed would often have to carry the lion's share of all these references. We did an entire tribute to My Dinner with Andre, where it was just my character and Abed, the brilliant Danny Pudi's character, talking at each other in a restaurant for 20 minutes on national television. There was so much dialogue.
Did you go back and watch the movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That movie, I mean, I couldn't believe we did it. And we had to have teleprompters because it was so much dialogue.
For your character of Jeff on Community, you know, most of the world is filtered through his sensibility of kind of smugness and sarcasm. Mm-hmm. Do you relate to that at all, or is that something you
not
relate?
At all, not at Terry. All, Terry. Not at all. Don't know what you were talking about. No, yes, I mean, that's a lot of people have said that character is so it's just you, right? And I go, well, I have a wife and two children. I am not I'm not just running around and, I'm not a lawyer. So, but yes, I do have a very similar trait to the character in that I cheated my way through high school and college, which I love admitting, because my character lies about having an undergraduate degree. And I am pretty dyslexic, so I never could really read whatever. I did terrible on my SATs. I couldn't read the way that other students read, so I would just cheat, which in my silly brain, I was like, this is a skill that I'm developing, how to just get around everything. So in a way, that really helped inform the character.
When you say you cheated, exactly what did you do?
Oh, I was able to. I would get a hold of tests.
Really? How do you do that?
At least at that time in college, there was a way to get a hold of tests. People would have them. They would. Different groups of students would save. I was in a fraternity for a very horrible short period of time, but it was a very organized system of saving all the tests. So you could, if it's the same teacher and they were not changing the test every year, you could be pretty close to what it was. So, and I would also just, I was terrible at doing languages. So I made sure I sat in between these two friends of mine and I made them move their desk closer to me. I mean, there's this sort of like juvenile stuff that I was doing to get through college. It's very, very sad. And I believe me, who's ever out there listening, do not cheat your way through college. I definitely probably shouldn't have. I wouldn't have graduated, but I always kind of knew I was going to be an actor. So there was I probably shouldn't have gone to college. I probably should have gone to an acting conservatory. That probably was the way to go. But then again, it's water under the bridge. But it was a whole different kind of performance, which was cheating. You hear that, kids? If you want your dreams to come true, just cheat.
Well, my guest has been Joel McHale. Thanks, Joel. I've lost all respect for you. The interview's over.
Oh, shoot. Dang it. I knew it. I knew this was too good to be true.
But you did go to acting school, right?
I did. Well, that, yes. And I didn't
cheat
you that.
You can't cheat with that. I mean, like.
No. Because when you walk on stage, you better know your lines.
Yeah.
Memorization is a completely different thing than just reading something.
Is
it's
it,
ironic,
you know,
now.
You even tweeted. You mentioned in a recent tweet that you were dyslexic, and I wasn't sure if that was if you were kidding or not. But apparently,
no. I'm dead serious. Not. That's why there's all these live shows we're doing with The Soup now, and I'm reading teleprompter the whole time. And people wanted to promote it by saying anything could go wrong. That's what the E executives wanted, and I was like, no. Just tell them I'm dyslexic. That should raise the stakes enough. And so I really have to concentrate. I mean, it may not look like I'm concentrating and I'm just screwing around, but I really do have to concentrate while I'm reading. And half the time I'm getting it wrong, but you can't tell because I'm just making up different words for it. So it's a kind of it's smoke and mirrors. But no, I really am. So I didn't get for real diagnosed until a couple of years ago when this doctor began describing everything. I was like, oh, you're absolutely describing me right now. And they're like, yeah, we could tell.
Joel McHale speaking to Terry Gross in 2014. He stars in the sitcom Community, once seen on NBC and now presented by Yahoo, and also hosts the E! Network clip and commentary series, The Soup.
No, it's funny. Like, people know you from Community, where, like, you've gone back to community college. When you were born, correct me if I'm wrong, your father was dean of students at a branch of Loyola University in Rome, which is
yeah.
where you were born. So you're from, like, an academic family.
My grandfather worked for the UN, and I have
wow.
my aunt's a journalist. My other uncle works for UN Films Africa. He's lived in Nairobi for the last 35 years, and yeah, so I have really disappointed the family. I have really brought it down. Yeah, my dad, he grew up on the south side of Chicago. So my mom's family was there because my grandfather worked for the UN. But my dad grew up on the south side of Chicago. And when he was, I think, a freshman in college or a senior in high school, he went and saw the movie Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn and just basically said, that's where I'm going. And he made it happen. And he went to Loyola in downtown Chicago and then was able to get the money together to get over to Rome and live there and met my mom. She was a student, and they had three boys. And everywhere we went, they would point to us and go, Biondio, Biondio, because we were blonde kids. And then my dad was making $6,000 a year, and he couldn't support a family of five. And so we moved to Seattle.
How old were you when you moved?
Very young, four. Three, and so I don't know any Italian. I do have an Italian birth certificate, and I lost my my passport got stolen. This is now 20 years ago when I went back there, and I walked into the American consulate, and they were very confused as to, because I have, it says on record that I was born there, and I'm this big, you know, galoot of an American kid going like, hi, I've lost my passport, can you help me? And you were born here? I'm like, that's right, born right here. Can I have some apple pie, please? So they were very confused to the point where they only issued me a passport for a month. They were like, we're going to give you a passport today. We usually don't do this, but we'll give it to you since you're very convincing. And they let me have it.
So were your parents frustrated that you did not excel academically, and did they know that you cheated, which you confessed to earlier?
They did
today?
Not know that. No, my mom, she would edit my papers, and she would get it. She would go through like the stages of grieving or her own. She would start looking at my papers, and she would then get angry. And she'd be like, what is this? What? She would be like very confused. And then she then would get very sad. And she would be like, what has happened? My son can't read or write very well. He's in high school. You know, she would help me with my college papers. She's like, what is going on? And then she would just start laughing. Then she would read sentences out loud to my dad, like she's reading a Dave Barry article out loud because they were so hilariously off and wrong. So yeah, my mom was a newspaper editor.
So she's incredibly good at what she did. And she knows language backwards and forwards, and she knows split infinitives and all that. Whatever sort of grammar problem, and I couldn't do any of that. So thank God I went into acting.
When you moved to L.A., the first jobs you got were in commercials. What kind of products were you advertising?
Oh, I did like 40 spots for Burger King. Man, I sold beer. I sold a lot of Bud Light. I sold a grill called the Fire and Ice Grill to Go, which was half cooler, half grill, which if you hit a button and the thing separated. But if you grilled while they were together, which meant the grill was directly on top of a plastic cooler, you would have a real disaster on your hand. Deodorant, Microsoft, furniture. I mean, you name it. I think I did 200 commercials.
Joel McHale speaking to Terry Gross in 2014. He stars in the sitcom Community, now presented by Yahoo, and hosts the satiric e-series The Soup. Coming up, Joel McHale will tell us about hosting last year's White House Correspondents' Dinner. That's after a short break. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.
Support for Fresh Air and the following message comes from Blinds.com. Blinds.com has you and your windows covered this April. Whether you want to watch those spring flowers blossom or need a glare-free look for your media room, Blinds.com makes it easy to get the look you want. You can save up to 25% off top-selling window treatments. And as always, you'll get free samples, free shipping, and free expert decorator advice. Blinds.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, in for Terry Gross, back with more of Terry's interview with Joel McHale. He stars in the comedy series Community, which ran for 5 seasons on NBC and now continues with new episodes on the streaming site Yahoo Screen. McHale also hosts The Soup on E!, where he satirizes reality shows and celebrity news. Last May, he satirized more serious subjects, politics and the news media, when he was the featured comic at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. President Obama was his opening act. Terry spoke with Joel McHale last June, shortly after he had hosted that high-profile Tough Room event.
You know, I want to talk with you about the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which you did. You were very funny. But I want to mention, you had pages with you. You had notes you were reading from. And I was thinking, I don't know if that relates to the dyslexia or not, but when I saw it, I was wondering, maybe you didn't want to put it in a teleprompter because you didn't want anybody to read it beforehand and say, you can't say that.
Right. Well, you got it. You nailed it. Yes, that's exactly it. I mean, I knew those jokes backwards and forwards by the time I got up there. I mean, I had painstakingly pored over thousands of jokes that I hired people to write. This guy named Boyd Vico and Brad Stevens and K.P. Anderson. We all did it together and wrote these jokes for months and just kept whittling it down because I wanted it to be 20 minutes long. But you don't want to put it, especially for that gig, you don't put it into a prompter because everyone wants to see your jokes. So C-SPAN wants to see your jokes so they know who to go to with their cameras. The president's people would like to see your jokes and because they want to know what you're going to talk about. And so I don't want anybody to see any of my jokes because I feel like if C-SPAN knew who I was going to make fun of, then the camera would be on them before I was finished with the joke. I mean, they knew I was going to make fun of Chris Christie. But I think it's a good policy not to show anybody your jokes. And what makes our country the greatest country in the world is that they weren't going to censor me at all. But I think they were because they've never censored anyone doing it. They just wanted to see what you were going to talk about. Comedians kind of do that sometimes, but I didn't want them to. But they literally put no restrictions on what I was going to say. I could have said anything I wanted, which just shows you. I mean, in some countries, if I were to say the things I said, you would be thrown into jail in a lot of countries. So that's what's so great about this gig. You could do anything. So once I got up there, but yeah, it was I knew the jokes pretty well. And Conan O'Brien and Jimmy Kimmel said, and Seth Meyers all said, just keep telling the jokes, go slowly, and take no prisoners. And I took that advice to heart, hopefully.
And did they say, don't use a teleprompter, don't give anybody your speech beforehand?
They all said that. They all said they're going to, and everyone said they're all going to try to look at your jokes and don't let them.
Nevertheless, C-SPAN did have that you'd say CNN, Cameron was on Wolf Blitzer.
Yes. They were ready. They knew. I think they were able to anticipate some of the people I was going to hit. But, you know, I mentioned Patrick Duffy, and he was in the audience, and they didn't find
that's
him.
That's true.
Yeah. I mentioned De Niro. I made a joke about him, and I thought, well,
that was an hysterical joke. Would you do that?
Oh, what did I say? I said, and now I can't do an impression of Robert De Niro, but here's an impression of Robert De Niro's agent. And then I mimed picking up a telephone and going, he'll take it. And then I hung up because Robert De Niro in the past few years has, and I would too, as I believe me, if I were him, he's been cashing in on his legendary status and his national treasure status. And some of the movies he takes have not been, I mean, not every movie can be the greatest. So, but he hugged me afterwards and said, you had to do it. That's how it was good. Good. You had to do it. I would have done it too. And I went, oh, thank God. And then Chris Christie couldn't have been nicer. So I was very confused by that because I really went after him.
Well, since we're talking about Chris Christie, let's play what you said about Chris Christie at this year's White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Speaking of digestive systems, Chris Christie is here. He's actually here tonight. Wow, sir, you are a glutton for punishment. So here we go. Chris Christie, his administration canceled the train tunnel to Manhattan. They're closing the Pulaski Skyway, and they blocked the George Washington Bridge. Finally, a politician willing to stand up to America's commuters. Governor, do you want bridge jokes or size jokes? Because I got a bunch of both. I could go half and half. I know you like a combo platter. Now, I get that. I'm sorry for that joke, Governor Christie. I didn't know I was going to tell it, but I take full responsibility for it. Whoever wrote it will be fired. But the buck stops here. So I will be a man and own up to it just as soon as I get to the bottom of how it happened, because I was unaware it happened until just now. I'm appointing a blue ribbon commission of me to investigate the joke I just told. And if I find any wrongdoing on my part, I assure you, I will be dealt with. I just looked into it. It turns out I'm not responsible for it. Justice has been served. He's going to kill me.
But apparently he didn't kill you, Joel McHale.
He did not kill me, thank God. That's the first time I haven't heard that. I heard that back once, and that's the first time I've heard it back. And it's such a strange room, because if you tell a joke about one person or one party, that party is going to be silent, and everyone else goes, ooh, and then you flip it to the other party, and the other party also goes, ooh. So you kind of have to measure your success through oohs. Very strange. That's why at one point I think I even said, all right, now just the men.
That's right, you did.
Sounded like they were on a roller coaster or something.
But the most strange thing about doing the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I would think this is the most strange thing, is that the president, President Obama in your case, is sitting right next to the microphone. And you know that the first thing you're going to do when what you say is finished is you're going to walk away from the podium, back to your seat, and the president is going to shake your hand, and either half-heartedly or enthusiastically, depending on how it went and how he took it, and you're not going to know how he took it until it's over, so that's got to be awkward. Let me play what the very, very opening was, and then we'll talk about how you got to deciding that should be the open.
Okay.
Good evening, Mr. President. Or as Paul Ryan refers to you, yet another inner city minority relying on the federal government to feed and house your family. Now, allow me to tell you a little about myself. My name is Joel McHale. I'm on an NBC show called Community. That's exactly what I thought. I also host a show called The Soup, which is on the E! Network. Thank you. To Republicans in attendance, E! Is the channel that your deeply closeted gay son likes to watch. Democrats, it's the same channel that your happy, openly gay son likes to watch.
Okay, yeah. So great opening. It, you know, you made some Republican jokes, you made some Democrat jokes, you made jokes about your own show, you made jokes about your own audience. So
yes.
Covered a lot of bases really quickly. Talk a little bit about the process of getting that opening and deciding that's what the open should be. And I should say we edited that a little bit for brevity so that we could make a couple of points
right.
We wanted to get in.
Yeah. That opening, we kind of thought we have to hit the president quick and then explain who I was. That was kind of the overall.
You felt you had to explain who you were?
Yes, definitely. I still have to explain myself to my own family. So I still introduce myself to my 6 and 9-year-olds. And they go, okay, sure. All right, well, come on in. But it was, we knew the E! Jokes would be good. And I knew because Community has a very, very loyal audience. They're not the biggest, you know, it's like a Big Bang Theory. But I knew that the people in that audience were not the demographic of who watches Community, which is mostly teenagers. So I knew the response would be very tepid. So that's why I said that's exactly what I thought. But as you said, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever done because, yes, the president is to your right and he's 5 feet away and he has just gone up on stage and killed. He's terrific at telling jokes. So he actually does a very bizarre thing, which is warm up the audience in a very because he's up there slaying it. So you have to get up there and follow the leader of the free world. And then when you look out, into this audience, and it's the only audience I've ever been in where everyone looking back at you is somebody you know and is somebody recognizable. And it's like being in a wax museum where it's like, this is crazy. And then before the most nerve-wracking gig of your life, you sit with the First Lady for 2 hours. You have a one-on-one dinner, basically, with the First Lady. So it's the strange. So then you have the First Lady, who I must add that she is possibly the loveliest person in the world next to my wife, and I really dig her. She's as cool as they come, and so you sit there and you chat, and you know in the back of your mind the whole time we are having this conversation that, oh, yes, in an hour from now, you are going to go tell jokes for 20 minutes, and if you screw this up, you will be probably dragged through the streets. So there was not one normal thing about the entire thing.
I was wondering if you were, in a way, playing to your audience on Twitter as much as you were the people in the room.
Oh, I didn't think about that. All I kept thinking was this is what we literally did while we were I would go through all the material. We went through it so many times that I annoyed the three writers, but I had one of the writers, his name's Brad Stevens. He's a very funny guy. He would heckle me while I was rehearsing. So he would just scream at me like, how dare you? He's a national treasure. Didn't you see Mean Streets? How dare you? So I would then just keep going with the jokes. I'd be like, Hillary Clinton's daughter is going to have a baby. And he's like, don't you even dare go there. How dare you? So I kind of was able to anticipate. Now, I got used to somebody just yelling back and being offended.
Joel McHale speaking to Terry Gross in 2014. He stars in the sitcom Community, once seen on NBC and now presented by Yahoo, and also hosts the E! Network clip and commentary series, The Soup.
How did you know you wanted to act?
Boy, when I was an 8th grader, I kind of thought, or 7th grade, I thought, well, this is what I'm going to do. I was either try to become a professional athlete or an actor. And after you saw seeing how I play sports, you'd be like, okay, well, probably should go into acting. Then in sophomore year of high school, I really had kind of an epiphany where I went, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it until somebody stops, until I have to get a real job. I went to college, and I probably shouldn't have. I always felt kind of like, oh, you have to have a college degree, or you're not a real human being. And I kind of always had that stuck in my head, and I probably should have gone to a conservatory. But I just never stopped doing it. I just never wasn't in a play. I did a ton of improv. And very luckily, I got onto a sketch comedy show that was on the NBC affiliate in Seattle called Almost Live, which was a very strange show because it was nationally syndicated through a local affiliate. I don't think it ever has happened before or again. And we would bump Saturday Night Live to 12:05, and we got enormous ratings. And that really taught me, oh, you can make money doing this, and someone will take you seriously doing this. And I mean, it didn't stop me from doing everything else. I mean, doing plays and things. But I just thought having that job, that job made so many like friends and family go, oh, he's not a complete yahoo. He's mm-hmm. not a total ne'er-do-well. So because I was actually on TV getting paid for it, which everyone were shocked by.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joel McHale. He's one of the stars of Community, mm-hmm. and he also hosts The Soup. So for The Soup, you have to comment on all the reality shows and a lot of like celebrity gossip in the news. How much TV do you actually watch as research or for pleasure?
Well, I used to watch a ton of bad television because we had no staff. And it was about five of us, and we had to divvy up 7 days of television, 24 hours a week of all the channels. And it got to the point where I thought I was going crazy. And my wife would be like, you've got to come to bed. And I would say, no, I've got a couple more Extreme Makeovers Home Edition to catch up on. So you just go ahead, hon. It was very strange. And now we have 14, we have 12 people plus two interns that we watch. Everyone watches TV all the time.
But yeah, but isn't it hysterical when something like reality TV becomes your research? It's your work to watch it, and you have to watch it seriously and like take notes on it. And
right, you have to pay attention to it, which is also a form of torture. and I tell my mom, I go, Mom, you know when I was a kid and you told me to you turn off the television and go outside and play? I'd be like, you literally were hurting my career when you did that. You literally stopped me from doing what I do for a living. But and it's a silly job. I mean, it's the strangest job because I see it as like a 22-minute late night monologue. Where we just tell jokes about all the. That's why it's when people go like, "So, what do you think's happening with the Kardashians?" I'm like, "I don't know. Whatever comes down the line, we're going to tell a joke about it." But it's bizarre that with the way television has exploded and the technology now, there are so many different channels, and there are so many different, reality shows, and they are it is the cheapest form of television. It's cheaper than a game show. It's cheaper than renting a studio or a soundstage. You can just go out and follow insane people around. And, you know, like all those housewives shows, they're basically putting soap operas out of business.
So when fans see you on the street, what do they say to you, depending on whether they're Community fans or Soup fans?
My favorite people are like, hey, should I know you? And I go, perhaps. Because I usually go, they're like, I know you. I'm like, yeah, we're cousins. And they get threatened. They go like, and I was like, yeah, we went to high school. We dated. I can't believe you didn't remember that. And I don't have the problem like someone like a Matt Damon or, I don't know, Robert Pattinson. When they walk outside, they can't walk. I have no problem walking around. But believe me. But usually... If it's a person who's 15 or between 10 and 20, it's always Community. And if it's anybody over 25 to 50, it's always The Soup. And if then it's people over 80. It's from my work Henry Fonda and the Oxbow incident. but they usually yell some phrase back to me from The Soup, or they yell. they yell six seasons in a movie, which is the battle cry of Community, which there was a big joke in one season about how we, Abed, thought this one television show was going to be on for six seasons in a movie, and I said it's not going to last 3 weeks. And the six seasons in a movie became this hashtag on Twitter, which trends all the time, and so people will usually yell that, or they will yell from the soup. Someone will scream, "So meaty." So I think this is exactly the life that I thought I would have. This is very strange. People are yelling meaty phrases at me.
Yeah, only if you pledge, I think.
It better be made of hemp.
Joel McHale speaking to Terry Gross in 2014. He stars in the sitcom Community, now presented by Yahoo, and hosts the satiric e-series The Soup.
Support for Fresh Air comes from Rhino Entertainment with Captain Beefheart, Sun Zoom Spark, 1970 to 1972. On CD and LP, this box set features the newly remastered studio albums, a disc of previously unreleased outtakes and rarities liner notes by Rip Rents, with artwork by Don Van Vliet. Available now.
This is Fresh Air. In 2002, journalist Michael Finkel conducted a series of interviews with accused murderer Christian Longo, who'd actually been impersonating Finkel when he was captured. Those interviews are now the core of the new movie True Story, which features Jonah Hill as Finkel and James Franco as Longo. Film critic David Edelstein has this review.
Here's the premise of the film True Story. There's this New York Times Magazine reporter, Michael Finkel, played by Jonah Hill, who in 2001 writes a cover piece about the African slave trade. The problem is he can't find a main subject on which to hang the article, so he creates a composite figure. Bad luck, he gets exposed and fired, and then returns to his Midwest home in shame. Not long after, he learns a fugitive named Christian Longo was captured in Mexico posing as journalist Michael Finkel. There's strong evidence Longo, played by James Franco, murdered his wife and three small children and dumped their bodies in an Oregon waterway. Finkel decides to interview this liar who stole the name of a liar. You see, Finkel doesn't know why he lied in that Times article. He thinks if he can understand Longo, he can understand himself. He even says to Longo, "I'm hoping you can tell me what it's like to be me." That's the drama of True Story, and I think the best term for it would be dumb. Possibly there's something to the idea that a guy lying about being a famous person has similar motives to that famous person lying to maintain fame, though even as I say that, I'm thinking, nah, it's a literary conceit, a hook for a book in which Finkel can simultaneously beat himself up and make you empathize with him. Finkel's memoir does a better job selling the premise than the movie he co-wrote, and Jonah Hill can't sell it at all. He's an edgy comic actor who wants to be acclaimed for his seriousness. To play a writer, he sits slack-jawed, earnest to the point of having no journalistic wiles whatsoever. Meeting Franco's Longo in prison for the first time, he radiates inauthenticity.
Thank you for seeing me, Mr. Longo.
Call me Chris.
Nice to meet you, Chris.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too. What are you writing?
Sorry, it's a habit.
First impressions?
Yes, first impressions.
Hmm. What'd you put down?
Brown eyes.
That's not very remarkable. Sure, 70% of the world has brown eyes.
I guess so. I don't.
You know, there's a mathematical technique that will determine how ordinary a person you are. Not just your looks, but your whole life.
Really?
By my calculations, I'd say I'm pretty ordinary. I've been decent and regular for 92.88% of the time. But you couldn't tell that from reading the papers.
That scene is like Silence of the Lambs for nitwits. But Franco at least gives True Story a dash of perversity. Longo's defense comes down to the idea that his wife killed the kids and he dumped the bodies because something. He's even less convincing than Robert Durst in The Jinx, and the lack of mystery dampens what little suspense there is. To compensate, director Rupert Gould serves up fractured images of the child killings all the way through, building to the big reveal in a way I found cheap and ugly. Only one scene works. Felicity Jones plays the dull role of Finkel's supportive wife. But near the end, she shows up at the prison to play Longo music by Renaissance composer Carlo Gesualdo, who brutally murdered his wife, her lover, and maybe his infant son. Then she incinerates Longo with a stare and declares that he's nothing like her husband. Duh. The scene is absurd, a bone thrown to a gifted actress, but it's surprising and intense. I had high hopes for True Story because I just read John Ronson's new book, So You've Been Publicly Shamed, which recounts the Twitter gang-ups on, among others, writer Joan Allaire and publicist Justine Sacco. If Finkel had probed his own motives, I think he'd have found that writing about Longo was his attempt to fasten on someone guiltier than he was, only someone without shame. There's a bizarre contradiction at the end of the film. Finkel denounces Longo and takes what appears to be his final leave, at which point a title card says the real Finkel still talks to Longo every week. My guess is that much of the time they chatted about which movie stars would play them. Nothing vanquishes shame like having an A-list actor affirm that you're a fascinating person.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. On the next Fresh Air, we speak with Toni Morrison. Her new novel, God Help the Child, is about a dark-skinned girl born to light-skinned parents.
I hate to say it, but from the very beginning in the maternity ward, the baby, Lula Ann, embarrassed me.
Morrison will talk about her book, her life, and being 84 years old. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.B. Nesper. Roberta Sherrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David Biancooley.